Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. I'm solo podcasting. I'm a week behind on my every other podcast, solo podcasting schedule. Life has been happening. It has been really full on, and I did an interview with Mike Winner on the Law of Mankind, and given that they were starting a new free Law of Mankind series this week, it felt wiser to post that podcast instead of the solo podcast. So I'm being flexible, I'm being nimble, which seems pretty crucial skills to have during the 21st century global apocalypse. You and me and all of us are surfing, transmuting, course correcting, all of those things. Before we dive into today's show, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to send this podcast to all of your friends, because the more the merriest. And it's so fun to have new, exciting visionaries like you in our tribe. Today's podcast is going to be a big girl, big boy panties required podcast, because we're talking about the words that we're not supposed to say. And if you're listening with your ears, I am making super sarcastic, exaggerated quote marks with my fingers, because I find the whole idea of an external authority attempting to tell me what I can and cannot say utterly and completely ridiculous. So we're going to be talking about the word that rhymes with bigger, that if we say in the public sphere or around trigger happy panty bunched infants, we can lose our entire careers, our entire reputation. Everything is on the line when it comes to this particular word. But before we dive in to language policing, I would like to comment on a communication habit that I see picking up steam. It's especially disturbing when I see it picking up steam among people who are over 40, because I feel like we don't have the kind of tech addiction excuse that, you know, Gen Z has. And really, what are we gonna do with Gen Z, guys? As long as we're on the topic. I have seen so much cell phone abuse in the past 2 weeks. It's gotten utterly ridiculous. And it coincides with Adam Curry speaking on the latest No Agenda podcast. Obviously, this show is not going to come out the same time that I'm recording it, but he was talking about the concept of entropy and how systems, when left to their own devices and not interceded with, will devolve into chaos. And this is definitely what I'm seeing around the smartphone addiction. It came up this week. It's so off the charts. Like, when I check in for the rec center gym, there's always this young woman behind the desk who's on her phone, and I need to interrupt her when I need to check in. And it's like, we're not even gonna go through the auspices of professionalism. We're not even going to pretend that any of these people who are being paid to work are going to be focused on the job at hand. Like, that seems to have been thrown away. And now it seems like these employers have surrendered to the fact that the children that they're hiring are going to be glued to their screens, and the customer is going to have to interrupt them and ask them if we can please be served in the roles that they're being paid to fulfill instead of scrolling Instagram. It's so cuckoo pants. That same day, I was at the gym and I had a brief period of time to do weights before I played racquetball. And there was a woman on the leg press machine who was just sitting there not doing anything and scrolling through Instagram. Literally, I'm not even exaggerating. She's just sitting there scrolling. And I said, "Excuse me, can I work in with you?" And she didn't even look up. She goes, "No, I still have more reps to do." And then she kind of half-heartedly starts doing calf exercises, but still scrolling on Instagram. And I was just like, wow. Wow, like whole new level of rudeness. And that she didn't even think to stop scrolling Instagram while she was doing her half-assed exercises beyond me. This is the same rec center when I was swimming laps. One time I came out of the shower buck naked. Is it buck naked or butt naked? Regardless, I was naked and I come out of the shower and there's a teen snapping a selfie of herself in the mirror and I'm there naked in her shot. And I'm like, excuse me, would you please delete that photograph of my naked body that I didn't consent to you taking in a locker room where I can't really think of anything less appropriate than you snapping selfies of yourself? Regardless of the fact that, like, it's amazing to me that this younger generation has no self-consciousness. Like, there's no self-consciousness or embarrassment around the blatant narcissism that has these people obsessed with their own image, with their own visage in public. Like, it's become, like, remember the day when that type of, like, isn't vanity a sin? Like, wasn't the myth of Narcissus a cautionary tale? It wasn't something to be lauded and propped up. Narcissus actually drowned to death because he was so enamored of his own reflection. This isn't actually where I was going with this, but while I'm on the topic, I'm thinking of another association that I'd like to make. But I'm gonna pause for a sip because it's early. We're taking our time. We're warming up into the big boy, big girl, canny part. Big boy, big girl, panty part of today's podcast. Have your trigger otter at the ready because I have misgivings, and I know some people find this empowering. Of, I was gonna say it's women with a certain amount of sun spins, but to be perfectly honest, if there's anyone in my Instagram feed who posts a sexy selfie of themselves, they're out. I'm not interested in that shit, and I don't want to support that shit. But I'm noticing more and more, and I have three examples in my brain, and I don't want to embarrass anyone. I interrupt the flow with an edit. I decided to cut out the short descriptions that I gave as shorthand for the women because I felt that they were still too easy to figure out who I was talking about, and I really mean no disrespect. So both of these women are, definitely over 40, if not in their 50s. And I don't say this to be ageist. But I do think there's something to that piece of like dignity and getting to a place in our lives where we're not like vampirically feeding off of external validation for our beauty. And then the third woman that I'm thinking of is a spiritual teacher, so freaking powerful. And what all of these three women have in common is that they've taken to posting videos of themselves. Very scantily clad and dancing while staring at themselves in the camera. And I find it odd. And as a woman who, like, trust me, I'm no feminist. The feminist movement, like, that's all a big giant Tavistock operation. And as I said in my most recent podcast with Mike Winner, like, I don't fight for things that are no duds, that are no brainers. So I'm never gonna fight for equal rights. Especially since I've had them ever since I was born, but also like my rights to freedom, to free speech, to expression, to travel, like whatever it is, like they're not in question. So why would I fight for something that isn't up for grabs for anything else to take, right? It doesn't make sense. It's like when I've made this comparison before, if a 5-year-old is saying, I'm playing policeman and you have to do what I say, and I'm like, no, I don't. I don't have to do anything you say. I'm like empowering this little child's playtime versus, that's a child. So, of course, I'm going to play along. But, like, when the ridiculous, little worms who are put in positions of being the powers that were attempt to tell me what to do, like, that's just freaking adorable. But I'm not going to fight, a little worm for a right that isn't theirs to take. But my point is simply that, like, at what phase in our life are we going to start to self-source? And again, it's not for me to micromanage anyone else's earth walk. It's a one-room schoolhouse. We could all play this game however we want to. But I feel like it's doing women a disservice. And in terms of the larger conversation around feminine empowerment, I find it annoying when these like powerful, accomplished, highly, highly intelligent women are now deferring to tits and ass and their sexuality to get likes and validation from random strangers. Like, I just don't feel like it's a good look for womankind in general, you know? And it's like, granted, the internet is a dumpster fire. Social media is a dumpster fire. It's all a freaking joke. But I'll see, like, you know, rando slutty woman X dancing, getting, you know, like hundreds of thousands of views, and like an intelligent, discourse or teaching gets like 30 or 35. And it's showing us like, okay, we're still there. Women are still being appreciated more so for their sexuality, for objectifying themselves, than they are for their intelligence or their ideas. And it's weird to me when we're the ones who are fostering this, when we're the ones who are like, yeah, I'd rather you give me attention for my tits and ass than, you know, my books, my articles, my ideas. I find that so odd. And again, like, I'm going to defend people's rights to do whatever they want until my dying breath, but I just feel like it's something that I wish we would have more more critical examination of. Like, it just bums me out when I'm seeing people, my own colleagues, do it, and I'm like, really? Is this is where you're at? Where, like, it's just. And then the other part for me is like, And granted, like, I get it. There's one woman who I'm thinking of who, she's a pole dancer. And I think pole dancing is like a beautiful and extremely challenging art, right? It takes a lot of physical skill. And so I think that's a little bit different, because I understand there's pride in achievement. There's pride in growing our skill sets and our mastery when we really devote ourselves to a sport, a craft, an art form. I get that. But what I don't get about that one is like, why does it have to be so slutty? And I have a good, really good friend who does pole dancing. And she says, which I've heard before, is like, they need to have skin to pole contact for a lot of the moves. So they need to be scantily clad to pull it off. And I'm like, all right, like, I can go with that. You know, swimmers have to wear bathing suits, but then why do you have to wear 8-inch like stripper heels to do it, which are so clunky when they like come crashing to the ground? Why do you need to be wearing like, you know, strappy fishnets or like whatever? Like, it's just the aesthetic of it. And I get it's an outcropping of stripping, but it, like, is that really all that empowering for women? Like, why do we need to carry that along? It's like Halloween, where everyone has an excuse to dress slutty. And I'm just like inviting womankind to examine, like, what is this desire to be slutty? What is this desire to be celebrated for your tits and ass all the time? Like, have we not evolved past this? Like, what, in the same way that we saw, like, Obama and Black Lives Matter, like, bring in this like contrived, engineered racism 2.0 reboot that we're living through now. It's like, that's what I see going on with all this sluttiness. But coming back to my other point of like, okay, you want to share with your audience and the whole world your improvement as a pole dancer. Okay, fine. No harm, no foul. But when I'm talking, like, the other two women I'm talking about are not dancers. They're not trained dancers at all. They're not doing like choreography. They're not like sharing an art form. It's like, you know, we've all done it. Okay, I want to get into my sensuality, so I'll do some sexy dancing in my mirror. It's kind of one of those, like, it's a little bit embarrassing. It's a little bit like, this is what I do by myself. So it's weird to me when I see these very accomplished, more mature women who are posting this shit on the internet. I don't know, it just bums me out for like the larger, like, empowered feminine conversation of seeing women who I had And granted, this is on me. Like, I had expectations. That's my shit that I'm projecting onto them. I'm thinking of the Breakfast Club line. I expected more from a varsity letterman. It's like I'm expecting more from these varsity lettermans, and I'm super sad to see it devolved into that, like, same old boring trope of women just needing to like sexualize themselves and objectify themselves so that random strangers can tell them they're pretty so that they can have a semblance of self-esteem. And I am definitely looking at my intolerance for this. I just feel like, you know, and it goes back to this like debasement, this demoralization, right? The very first stage of ideological subversion of seeing these women like succumbing to like all sluts all the time. I've talked about this before, so I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's just over the top and it bums me out. But this is not actually my point in bringing up the cell phone thing. I'm going to pause for another sip. The reason why I actually brought it up was because there's a certain communication pattern that does not work for me on any level. And it's the swiftest way to make sure that I'm going to ignore you for way longer than I naturally would. So I am not addicted to my phone. I do not bring my phone with me in public. At the end of the day, there will be, you know, anywhere from like 12 to 30 texts that I haven't even looked at. I take my time. I'm not a slave to technology. I will respond when I feel like responding. Nothing's that urgent. I'm not curing cancer. I'm not like a doctor or anything like that. So, it goes a little something like this. Someone will text me something, and then when I don't get back to them in whatever period of time they have decided that they are deserving of a response from me, then I'll get another nudge, either like question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, or I still haven't heard a response from you. And in these instances that have happened this week, it's been like an hour. 2 hours. And it's like, oh, do you think that I work for you? Do you think that I'm your beck and call girl? And just because you decide to text me, that I'm gonna drop everything and get back to you immediately? It's lame. It's like the surest way where, like, okay, I was gonna respond to you tonight, but now I'll respond to you in a week, maybe. And I don't know what that is. Like, I've been exploring attachment styles. And so I recognize, oh, okay, I can see like someone who's working with anxious attachment doing something like that, but that doesn't make it okay, right? So in that instance, it's up to the person who's been tasked with transmuting anxious attachment inclinations to self-soothe, self-source, and use their own tools to quell any anxiety that may or may not be coming up in the space of messaging me and me responding. And I see it, of course, among the younger people because they're addicted to their phones and they're the ones who it's like physically fused to their hands and they can't freaking function without it. But it's weird to me when it's people who are like Gen X and older. Like that just does not make any sense to me. It's like anyone who is rocking this pattern, I'm encouraging you guys to look at yourself and see what is going on that has you thinking that the people reaching out to you need to respond in whatever timing you've made up in your head is appropriate. And I'm going to encourage you to do whatever work is necessary to let that go. Personally, I find that if I am like psycho emotionally healthier and happier, the longer I go without looking at any tech whatsoever. So a lot of times, and you know, people who know me well know, like, I might not respond to a text or a phone call for like a week, 2 weeks, a month, you know? If something's important, I tell people like, let me know if there's some sort of urgency. Of course, if something's like time sensitive, we're scheduling something that's different. But I think like whatever that pattern is that started to take hold, where someone sends a text and then they don't get the response, so they send another text, please stop that. Or if you're going to continue that, just know that you are, when you're dealing with me, you're extending the amount of time in which you're going to get a response because all that does is push me further and further away. And I think it's super rude. I think that's it for the cell phone stuff. I mean, the entropy is really off the charts. Let's move on to the topic at hand because it's a big one. And I'm figuring out, I'm like, how can I speak about this in a way that's kosher, that's culturally kosher, but that also feels aligned for me? And I'm realizing that I want to pull something for this segment, so I'm going to pause real quick. Today's topic is inspired by Mo Fax, who I love and adore. I've been on Mo's show 3 times thus far, and we've had a number of conversations and exchanges behind the scene, and I really respect Mo. If you're not familiar with his podcast that he was doing with Adam Curry, they actually just tied it up in a bow. They did 100 episodes. And what I love about Mo is that he and I don't always agree on things, but we still respect how one another speak, and we have such like juicy and inspired conversations where the mutual respect remains, it remains strong regardless of what we're talking about. But for his final show with Adam, it was called The N-Word. And it was a great show, right? Mo does great shows, and it was juicy. And as a black man, Mo's perspective, as I understand it from watching the podcast, is that only black people have the right to say the word that people refer to as the N-word. I have a problem with that because I feel saying the N-word is completely infantilizing. I have a lot of problems with the whole thing, which is why we're doing today's show. But for the sake of the thought police, I'm just gonna say Igernay, and we're gonna leave it there. Because I find saying the N-word, like I feel like a 4-year-old. She said the S-word. She said the F-word. And now, because there's this like cultural agreement around the fact that people with a certain melanin deficiency are not allowed to say a word that people with a certain amount of melanin are allowed to say, like, I just think the whole thing is super ridiculous. And here are my ideas about it. And I have a long history with this word. So for me personally, I grew up in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is super very diverse. There were always black people in dance, in gymnastics, in school. My high school was like, predominantly Jewish. And then there were, black people and Iranian people, and we were all friends and we all dated one another, and there was never, never any racial tension. I did not experience that growing up. Granted, I grew up on the West Coast, and part of what, I've learned from tuning into Mo Fax, because his lens of perception is always seeing things through race, is that like there's no one America. There are so many different Americas. And I think a lot of the conversation around racism, and I'm not talking about the fake engineered, like Obama Black Lives Matter version that is a freaking joke that unfortunately has taken hold and created these like completely contrived tensions in our country. But real deal racism, like, was not a thing when I grew up. I grew up in the 70s, Free to Be You and Me. When the Cosby Show came on, everyone watched Cosby. Like it wasn't for black people. We all watched Sanford and Son. We all watched the Jeffersons. My first doll was Fred Sanford, who I loved. One side of him was like wearing a Hawaiian shirt and shorts, and the other side he was wearing like a 70s tux. Anyway, but I was not really exposed to that. So I didn't hear the word Igernay being used at all. I knew it was like a terrible word, of course. It was the adventures of Huckleberry Finn that inspired me to be a writer, because the amount of emotion that was generated through those conversations between Huck and Jim, really had a profound effect on me. So it's not like I was totally in the dark. Like I knew it was just like a gross, ugly word that I had never said, and I didn't know anyone who had ever said that word. Cut to, I was in my 20s when I started hanging out at the Rodeo Grounds, which was this like very wild arts commune at the very base of Topanga Canyon, like right behind the Malibu feed bin. And it was a wild, awesome scene. And I credit my time at the rodeo grounds with a lot of my deprogramming, with a lot of my exposure to authors, mystics, spirituality, psychedelics, ideas that like really quantum leapt my expansion. Ultimately, I moved there. And for those of us living there, even when we were hanging out there, if we needed to make a grocery run, we'd go into Malibu. If we needed to go to the post office, we'd go into Malibu. So there was a lot of going into Malibu when hanging out in Topanga. And the Malibu people, right, like that class of people, that community of people, really didn't like the rodeo grounds people. They really didn't like the unwashed hippies coming into Malibu to do their stuff. And my friend James Mathers, brilliant artist, brilliant poet, and at the time, king of the rodeo grounds. One time we were talking and he said, yeah, those fancy ass Malibu people don't like the Topanga Igernays coming into their turf, except he didn't say Igernays. He actually said the word. And it was shocking to my system. It was like, oh my God, I've never heard anyone say that word in front of me. And I knew that James wasn't racist at all. And it was very similar to reading H The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, where like the resonance and power of that word like moved me. It moved through my own body and it had an impact. And I knew exactly what he meant. It wasn't a racial statement. He was talking about class differences and he was talking about a certain type of bigotry. That we were experiencing as the Topanga hippies coming into Malibu. And I recognized in that moment the power of that word. And I felt like that's really interesting. Like, that's a really interesting way to communicate. It's not something that I picked up in that moment. But it also reminds me of the Patti Smith song, Rock and Roll Igernay, right? And it's so interesting in all these conversations around this word. Like, remember when they tried to cancel Joe Rogan for it? Patti Smith gets this pass. Like, I have not heard her being criticized. And I don't think that she should be. Like, again, she was making a point. It's like this powerful cultural critique to use that word in these ways. And then the years pass by, and I noticed like, I'm afraid of saying that word. Why won't I allow myself to say that word? And I have been in a constant examination of my own programming, of the places wherein I am not sovereign or I'm not allowing myself to be sovereign since I was in college. So I was just looking at like, what is my reticence to say that word? So I started to kind of titrate into it in social situations and kind of drop it in the same way that James was dropping it to make a larger point, like never, never having anything to do with Black people. And you want to shut down a conversation really fast, you want to make people uncomfortable really fast. Drop that word in a random conversation. Like, I just watch people contract, right? And it's like I'm always experimenting with language slash everything. I'm always poking the bear to just to see where is humanity at. I don't know if it's an aquarium thing. I don't know if it's a 60th, gene key in the life's work thing, but I'm always kind of testing the fabric of humanity and just seeing where we at as a culture. And so I learned very quickly, like, people are very, very uncomfortable with that word, even when it's used in a non-racial setting. And I was talking to a friend of mine one day. We were pretty tight, and he was a Midwesterner, right? So very good, like strong moral center. And I was playing around, and I again dropped the Igernay word in making a different kind of comparison, and I watched him completely contract. And he was like, "Well, I would never say that word." And I'm like, okay, why not? Because it's not a nice word. I'm like, okay, but are you racist? No, I'm not racist. I'm like, well, if you're not allowing yourself to say a word, knowing that you're not using it to hurt anyone, then you're not free. Then you don't trust yourself. Not to mention how much power is being given to that word because It's the forbidden word. It's the word that we're not allowed to say. And so because we're not allowed to say it, again, I'm making quote marks with my fingers, because the idea that any external authority, whether it's a social contract or a thought policing mechanism, has any right to tell us what we are or are not allowed to say is a fiction. And it's a fiction that is holding humanity back, keeping us on our knees and keeping us from connecting from our true power and agency. Now, we play along with that by giving in to this social contract. And I want to be clear, I am not advocating for bringing this word Igernay back in terms of any sort of racial bigotry or hatred on any level. All you have to do is read my latest book, The Language of Betterarchy, and you know, like, I'm not down with any name calling whatsoever. But I do know that by making it for the forbidden word and creating all these guardrails around it, we are empowering it, and we are empowering an outdated bigotry, separation, hatred, and ugliness that it is time for us to heal. So I challenge my friend in this instance. I'm like, just say it. Like, it's just you and me alone in your house. We can turn our phones off. Just say the word. And he would not allow himself to say the word, right? And it's like, that's troubling to me when, like, even among safe company, when we know ourselves to be loving people, that we still hold ourselves back from saying whatever we want to say. And it's not even like he wanted to say it, but it's just my point was just like, there's a distortion here. There is a distortion in how we're upholding the rules around the banding of this word. So cut to a few years later, you know, Guru Singh is one of my favorite teachers. And I feel super grateful to be a contemporary of Guru Singh's, to be here on the planet while he is also here on the planet, and to have shared conversations with him. And so one time, back when I was putting more energy into my Society 6 product line, which still kind of exists, but it's in this like liminal, like obviously I'm not promoting or anything like that, but I made a t-shirt that said Guru Singh is my Igernay, except I use the actual word, and I did do the hard ER. I didn't do the A, because the world wasn't quite so crazy back then. Like, it's really only been, I think, since like the Obama Black Lives Matter, and we can't not link those because they came up at the same time. And I think it's very important for us to recognize that it was a year into Obama's presidency, a year in, oh no, was it? No, it was like his second term. I think, so for me, Black Lives Matter came into my consciousness around 2013. I think that's right. But it was under the leadership of the very first Black president that we were given the narrative that race relations had devolved to such a desperate, terrible place in this country that we needed this Black Lives Matter movement, which I find completely bizarro. Like, we haven't had a female president. We hadn't had a Jewish president. And keep in mind, I would never vote for anyone based on such shallow identifiers, which do not necessarily translate into policies that jive with me. But before then, like, there were different passes around the uttering of Igernay, you know, be it in hip hop, be it in just like more casual cultural conversation. So it wasn't nearly as forbidden and like reputation destroying back then as it is now. I'd say it was like probably 2012, maybe 2013 when I put out this shirt. Shocker, it didn't do very well. And one of my friends was like, Danny, I think you're upsetting people and you probably want to pull that product, which I did. And for me, it was just like, I mean, think of the expression, like, I'll do the hard A and not the hard ER, just so we can get the cadence. But I'm thinking of that movie with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. And he kept saying like, my nigga, my nigga. And like, There used to be a lot more leeway around that phrase, even with the hard ER, when it was being used to mean like my brother, my friend, like a close enough friend that like they're kind of closer to us than our other friends. It was being used as a term of endearment, right? I liken it to the way that I use tits now to like take that word back, right? I use tits to mean like, oh my God, this avocado chocolate mousse is tits, right? It means something amazing. I mean, I guess tits are always amazing because tits are lovely. But my point is just that, like, it wasn't the type of thing that is so destructive as it is now. Obviously, the world's gotten crazier and crazier in terms of language policing, identitarian politics, this whole ridiculous fake racism. I did just see Am I Racist last night, which brings me to the visual aid. So I saw the new Matt Walsh movie mostly because I wanted to support it in the theaters, and I was curious. And I thought he did a good job. I didn't know that he could act. I was like, wow, it takes a lot of balls to do what he's doing. But he mentioned a book, and I'm going to share it with us now. So he mentioned this book in the movie, or I guess one of the booksellers did when he was like on his anti-racism journey. So, excuse my French, but what the fuck kind of title is this? Like, what are we supposed to do with this? So, look at the trap. Like, and this is where I see this, like, this group is allowed to use this word and no one else is allowed to use this word. So it's like, okay, so we don't want equal rights, we want privileging, right? This group wants to be privileged and have privileges that other people don't have. And when I say group, I'm not talking about any people. I'm talking about the larger movements. And if you guys have been tuning into me, you know that I think that all movements are ops and are lame and like nothing to get involved with. But like, okay, so Randall Kennedy wrote this book called Igerne. But according to, this social contract, we're not supposed to say this word, right? But then if we're buying into this whole like anti-racism grift, then the people who would choose to read this book are the same people who would have no problem canceling people for saying the title of this book. So do you see the trap here? Like, what am I supposed to do if I'm on an anti-racism journey to deal with my white fragility? Then how am I supposed to ask for this book? How am I supposed to buy this book? How am I supposed to ask the bookseller if they have this book in stock without infantilizing myself, without putting myself in a lower status position where I can be sheepish and it can be like some weird kind of awkward psycho emotional, sorcery to even buy this book. So, for those who are listening with your ears, the title of this book is Igerne, but it's not in Pig Latin. The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word. This to me is indicative of how this anti-racism grift is more like a sadistic power play than anything real. And I feel like this book that Randall Kennedy has given us, and I don't know anything about it, the title itself is some weird sadistic power play, which is all this whole thing is. So going back to Mo's perspective, and he did a good job around like the history of this word, although I was bummed that he didn't get into the Patti Smith use of it, is so according to Mo, only Black people are allowed to use this word and not in mixed company, only with themselves. And I could see like, okay, so let's just bookmark the idea of like this is a privilege word. And only certain classes of people have the right to say this word, while everyone else is not allowed to say this word. Let's just put that aside. I will give him props for saying it's not polite to use it in mixed company. Because, yeah, if you're in mixed company and we're going along with the grift and this social contract, then yeah, it would be weird to like wield that word in a group of people where some of those people cannot do the same. And I feel so weird using this languaging around it. Cannot, aren't allowed, you know, like. And this is where I go back to it's so infantilizing. And it's this infantilization that props up hierarchy, right? Hierarchy rests on the idea that we are all little children who haven't grown up. We're still dependent on daddy government. We're still dependent on, you know, doctors wearing white coats with a bunch of initials behind their name to tell us about our own bodies. We're still dependent upon, you know, the social engineers telling us which words we're allowed to say, which words we're forbidden in saying. Like, all of this is the hierarchy grift, that we're not of equal status. Some people have more privilege and can say more words than other people. It's freaking lame. And this is my problem with saying the N-word. How do we say the N-word and stand in any sort of adult autonomy? And how come it's the N-word, but it's not the K-word or the C-word, right? Everyone's allowed to say kike, not just Jews. I'm not gonna say the C-word because we're still in the public Progressive Radio Network segment, and I know that that is a tough word for some people to hear. But it rhymes with punt. We'll say unt K since it's Pig Latin Day. How come we don't have those same guardrails around those words the way we do around igerne? I don't understand the pass. And it's not, none of this is to diminish the harm that that word has caused. And, you know, the division that is coded, that is, there's no question the division that has been coded into that word. And culture's come a long way in rebranding that word, in taking that word back. And then we're at this stage where, you know, this fake anti-racism grift, it's like if you picture the spider, like, you know, trying to get out of the faucet and it's almost at the top and then it falls all the way back down. I feel like that's what's happened with, you know, I'm just gonna call it the Obama anti-racism grift, because in my mind, I saw it starting after he stepped into power, which again, if we pull back to the macro, makes no sense. So it goes back to like, do we want to be equal or do we want to be privileged? And again, going back to like my fundamental criticism of hierarchy is that hierarchy is an organizational structure that is based on privilege. That is the foundation of hierarchy, is that some groups are going to be privileged and some groups are going to be expected to take short shrift. So by giving this word to certain people and then forbidding the rest of the world from uttering it, all we're doing is doubling down on hierarchy, doubling down on privilege, thus exacerbating all of the negative repercussions that come out of hierarchy, which is resentment, division, separation, fear, lack, limitation, conflict, right? All of these energies that don't do a collective body good, they're not helping us as a singular human species. So I find that odd, you know, and it's like, I'll just stick with kike as a Jew because I think it's fair game for that. But it's like, everyone's allowed to say kike. You don't have people being canceled, having their entire reputations destroyed. It's not a word that I like, you know, I can't see. And also, it's not like, it isn't like igerne in terms of like it hasn't been appropriated by an art movement, by a music movement, right? It hasn't had the purification and the rebranding that Igerne has had, but still, it's like it's a dangerous precedent to set to decide that certain groups are allowed to say things that other groups are not. I just think as like a basic precedent, It's not a good one. Either everyone says the word or no one says the word. And from my estimation, I want everyone to be allowed to say whatever they want, whenever they want. And we can determine, like the same way that I learned when I was playing with it in the Patti Smith, James Mathers kind of way, I learned from experience that doesn't go over very well. Like that's not going to win me any friends. That's not going to open doors for me, even though I understand the way that I'm using it. And it was very specifically to try to remove the charge. And I noticed for myself, well, let me come back to it. But it wasn't like my intention was never, never to create hatred or separation. But I realized, like, oh, we're not there yet. And this is so much of my earth walk is realizing, like, oh, humanity isn't there yet. Humanity isn't, hasn't evolved or matured enough yet to handle a lot of these ideas. It's fine, right? So I pulled back and removed it from my lexicon when I saw like, oh, that isn't working. But I still feel like where we're at with it is doing us more harm than good. So what I learned from my own personal experience and experimentation with that, when I heard James Mathers saying it in reference to the kind of cultural tension between the Topanga hippies and the Malibu residents, as I said, it was shocking. It like shocked my system. And given how demoralized our culture is, how like, I mean, remember when 2 Live Crew and Eminem were getting censored? When Tipper Gore was going the distance to get those songs pulled, from radio stations, and then they were forced to like add those like advisory warnings on the albums. Look how far we've come in terms of like the debased nastiness that is spewed just in all these pop songs. Look at Wet Ass Pussy. Like, how is that a song that gained as much popularity as it did? Look how far we've devolved as a culture that, like, the guardrails around what language is appropriate for the youth have been completely obliterated. And now it's like, say whatever smut you want to say, watch whatever disgusting porn you want to watch, smoke pot with your friends, before you've hit puberty. Like, all of this is fair game now. And no one raises a freaking eyebrow. Look at porn. Like, please don't look at porn. I think porn has done humanity a gross, gross disservice. And I'm using that word, with the multiple meanings assigned to gross in terms of largesse and in terms of like freaking gross. The only upside I could see to porn's proliferation is it took some of the what would the right word be? Like, I think it basically showed us like everyone's a perv and it's all fair game. And I see some benefit to that, right? Like, okay, all shapes, all sizes, all flavors of exploration, because I don't know about you, but for me, I was absolutely affected by kind of Judeo-Christian morality and the subtle or not so subtle ideas that like having sex was bad or made you a slut or whatnot, right? So I can see, okay, there was a little bit of benefit in like helping us open up to the fact, that a lot of things are fair game that had before been derided as like shameful fetishes. But now it's like I'm just trying to think of how to put this, but like it's like porn before in the early days, when I'm thinking back to like 70s porn, 80s porn, it wasn't like so graphic where women were like completely shaved, completely spread open, like super close-ups of like, all of the details of the genitalia and people like ejaculating all over women's faces. Like it wasn't quite so base. And like, I feel like it's because porn's proliferation created such like a desensitization to nudity and sexual engagement that like, okay, well now all the women have to be shaved because if there's pubic hair, it's not titillating. Now all the women have to be completely spread inside out for anything to be titillating. It's like, Nicole Dadone talks about this in Slow Sex, and trust me, I have my issues with her as a cult leader, but I think Slow Sex is really a must-read book for all adult humans because her perspective, the perspective she shares in that book is that chasing more and more sensation is a zero-sum game. Like it's not sustainable. If we need more, excuse me, more and more stimulation, not sensation. Chasing stimulation is a zero-sum, unsustainable game because it gets to the point where, like, I'm going to use the most outrageous example, but I remember, I don't know if it was reading about or hearing about someone who like had to shoot himself while wearing a bulletproof vest to get off. And it was like this kind of incremental, like he needed this amount of pain and then he needed more pain and then he needed even more pain. And it just like all became escalated because like any drug addict, like one bump used to get you high, then it's two, then it's three, then it's four, then it's every 10 minutes, So it's the same thing in terms of sexual stimulation, where what Nicole Dadone proposes, which really resonates with me, is that it's so much wiser to pull back on the stimulation and increase our sensitivity because that we have control over and we become more and more sensitive, thus requiring less and less stimulation and can experience more pleasure in simplicity instead of in the complexity that comes out of chasing stimulation. So that's what I saw porn doing to us, and that's what I see happening with like this larger demoralization campaign where the lyrics to these songs these days are just vile, and I'm someone who likes hip hop. I'm someone who likes rap, and I'll listen to the lyrics of the songs I like, and I'm like, why am I putting this trash into my consciousness? And why am I singing along to this? This is so freaking gross. And so getting back to the point at hand, I don't even know how I got onto that tangent. When I started experimenting, and this was just for my own consciousness, with saying eager nay out loud in social situations to make comparisons to, like, I say this a lot, although I certainly don't say it in mixed company. The unvaccinated are the eager nays of the 21st century. I stand by that, right? And what we're saying is like, that's not a racial comment. But what I'm saying when I say that is like the way that Black people were mistreated and were the objects of a really violent and dehumanizing bigotry, during Jim Crow and beforehand, is the same way that the unvaccinated are treated in our culture now, and especially so during like the height of the COVID hysteria. But that kind of transfer of that word, which I ultimately think is very healing on a linguistic level, as well as on a cultural level, is no longer allowed. And the problem that I see with that is it empowers the outdated, hopefully outdated, negative coding within that word and allows it to be rebranded in a different way. Like from my perspective, what Patti Smith did with that word, that does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to continue listening to pick up the second half, you can find that over on my Patreon and my local sites. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both of those platforms, communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, post-show throwdowns, bonus content. So many benefits, plus the knowledge that you're giving back to one of your favorite content creators. I think that does it. Reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, reminding you that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Patreon and the locals. Have a rockin' day.